A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Dad, I'd like to read you an account from a tour guide at a specific spot in Australia, because I think it'll open your eyes a little bit. Is that okay?
Go for it.
It was a very ordinary day weather-wise on Cockatoo Island. I was doing a tour for a group of schoolgirls aged 11 and 12. Normally, I would conclude the tour on the front lawn of Balola House, but on this day, I ushered the students and their teachers into Balola House to escape the weather. The students were sitting on the floor. The girl to my right had her left arm extended out and was leaning on it. Next thing, she withdrew her right hand, startled, and looked suddenly to her left. After the tour, a teacher approached me with the girl in tow and asked her to tell me what had happened. She told me someone had smacked her hand hard, but there had been no one besides her. In September 2018, a group of Year 3 and 4 students joined me for a tour. During a break in the tour, two teachers approached me and asked, very awkwardly and somewhat embarrassed, if there were ever strange occurrences on the island. The teachers then revealed the story of a school camping trip they'd taken to the island 2 years earlier. They said two students, both girls, claimed they couldn't sleep because a little girl, aged 5 or 6, kept coming into their tent. The girl was dressed in a white dress and had wanted the students who'd been sharing a tent to come outside. When the teachers asked at the visitor center who else was staying on the island, they were told they were the only ones there that night. Another tour guide, let's call her Vicky, was doing a birthday tour for a group of kids, aged 10 and 11. On the lawn of Balola House, a girl told Vicky there was a little girl in a white dress looking at her from the window. And Dad, I didn't believe any of this, so I was digging around on the internet and I found out that the girl was called Mary Carolyn Mann. I just didn't believe any of this, I just thought it was crap, and so I was digging around on the internet and I found this photo taken near Balola House at night, and it's a photo taken by a tourist on one of these tours. And I zoomed in on a window way behind the tour group, and I'm not kidding, there she was, like, standing in the window, a girl in a white dress, staring right at me. And it was probably about 11 p.m. when I was doing this research, and I'm going to be completely honest, for a moment, I'm not kidding, she moved.
You saw her move in the photo?
Yeah.
Is that fair dinkum, Paul?
Yeah, 100%. Mm. Okay. I feel slightly physically sick. So, with that in mind, do you believe in ghosts, Dad?
No, not really.
When I was a kid, my dad was a cop. And we spent 5 seasons of Loose Units, the podcast, talking through his cases, but the unexplained and the paranormal kept rearing their heads. So this season, we're going to take a look at hauntings, ghost stories, and the crimes behind them. Because the story doesn't end when the killing is done. Welcome to Loose Units, the Shadow Files. Welcome to episode 1 of Loose Units, the Shadow Files. We are so excited to be here, and frankly, a little spooked out. So, obviously, Dad, the basic idea behind this show is interesting to me because you were a cop for many, many years, and for the past 5 seasons, we've been going through your cases and your time as a police officer, and you were in forensics, and, you know, everything you've done seems to have been very firmly rooted in facts. And I wrote a couple of books about your time on the police force, but all the cases that really stuck in the readers' and listeners' minds seem to be the ones that were a little bit creepy. Now, your reaction to that ghost story up the front of the episode was a little incredulous, but do you have any wiggle room in terms of your belief in this stuff?
I genuinely want to believe.
Right.
I seriously want to believe. But what I'm hoping, Paul, is that in this season, you and the guests and the evidence...
Mm-hmm.
Can possibly, perhaps will alter my opinion, because also, in fairness, I'm very open-minded. I've got to be honest with you, Paul. When you came up with this concept for the new season, well, you and Tegan, and put it to me, I was at first kind of thinking, it just seems a bit lightweight. But then as I've started delving into it, so I'm kind of getting a little bit excited, but I'm also nervous as to what we may sort of encounter.
I think it's fair to say that over the past couple of seasons, we have occasionally strayed towards this stuff, most notably towards the end of season 5, which was, you know, mere weeks ago. We talked about the case of the witch. And if you want to go back and listen, if you're new to the show, first of all, welcome to this incredible odyssey that Dad and I have been taking listeners down for quite a few years now. But one of the things Dad talked about at the tail end of last season was a case involving, I mean, I asked you point blank on the show whether you thought she was actually a witch. And I think your takeaway, and feel free to correct me here, was that she believed she was. But do you think it's possible that she actually was? Not to trivialize it, because it was a very sad case, but do you think she may have been a real witch?
Well, something I haven't told you, Paul.
Oh.
Because I know you love little surprises. Yep. Well, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't.
Yep, that's right.
I have been in correspondence with a person that is involved in forensics from your hometown, Paul. And this particular person has been writing to me in the most incredibly detailed and, quite frankly, so well-researched questions about that particular story, The Witch. And she posed to me a number of very, very good questions. And I really had to take time out to answer. And basically, she said to me, sort of the thrust of her very long email in point form was, how do I actually know she was a witch? And Paul, I ended up telling her a few things.
Which you didn't tell me, I assume.
That I did not tell you.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And I will share that with you and maybe the listeners one day. I shared a few things that were not involved in our story for various reasons. And also in fairness to this particular person's family. I answered those questions and I had a response back yesterday. And this person involved in forensic medicine basically said, I now understand. So,
you turned a forensic skeptic around.
Correct.
This story was really upsetting, and we are not trying to capitalize on the sadness of these things, but one of the things that really captured our imaginations was the fact that you hear a scary story, right, Dad? You hear a really messed up story like The Witch, or you hear a kind of urban myth, or you go to a house or a jail or a historic site, and you get told this, or, you know, for example, you hear about, you know, like Minnie, a girl in a white dress. But you never really hear about the kind of story that got them there, right? You never hear about the kind of, you rarely hear about the history behind the place and the explanation for why this person or thing might be there. Now, I'm not coming in as a full-blown believer. I should really point that out. But I am, I think, because I'm an author, I'm a creative, so I think I'm very open-minded and my imagination's very, very hyperactive, whereas Dad's a lot more facts-based. But with the witch case, it was interesting because the only other time that I could think of in your case files that involved haunting, like a traditional haunting, turned out to be bullshit. I mean, it was, do you remember the time there was someone kind of whispering through the air conditioning vents into the cells?
Yeah. But look, you know, I want to believe. I really do. But then I also don't want to believe.
Why?
Because it'd scare the bejesus out of me.
But isn't that cool? Doesn't that?
Yeah, but Paul, being scared is, like, you know, it's, I'm looking out and it's a glorious day here in Sydney. It's beautiful. The sun is shining, but when the sun goes down, things happen. And let's face it, a lot of very fucked up crime happens when it's dark. Why? Because you can operate within the cover of darkness. But there are so many things in this world that we cannot explain. You know, you've got skeptic societies, you've got all these different groups within society, and they're all kind of, you know, clamoring for and to prove or disprove theories. I think what we're embarking on is going to be, for me, because once I found out we were doing this season, I've actually kind of had some weird feelings in the last few weeks that I can't quite explain. And I know that sounds absolutely crazy because I just kind of feel as though we're going to go into something that at the other end, I think we'll have some, perhaps our opinions may have changed or they may have become reinforced.
We could flip, you know, I could come out more of a skeptic and you could come out a full-blown believer in this stuff. But I mean, the idea with this series is to really try and explore the stories behind these stories and try and, you know, try and look at, especially, I mean, Australia is full of these incredible sites with incredible tragic history. And there's going to be some stuff in here where we try and go international. There's going to be, you know, kind of local folklore, but we're really going to try and do a dive into locations that are haunted and trying to figure out why, but also exploring the fact that, look, the link between law enforcement and, you know, the paranormal seems completely detached. I mean, I couldn't see the link between those two things. But then, a couple of months back, we got contacted by a woman who we're going to keep anonymous, but she is a police officer who is a member of a group that actually investigates this kind of stuff. They investigate haunted sites and they investigate paranormal events, and they're police. So she has, within her career, these two things coexisting. She has those two sides that we now have, right? You've got like facts and you've got the unexplainable. And she somehow manages to do those two at once. Mm. So we sat down with her and we asked her to explain how these two things can coexist. Scarlett, could you tell us a bit about this group that you are a part of?
So we go around to all different locations and we investigate them. We get invited to some places we ask to go to, and we capture all different types of evidence, and we do try to help people that need help when on the occasion, but we try to stay away from the more private cases. We let other people and other groups do that. So, but yeah, we've been all around America investigating, and then here in Australia, it's been great.
What is your background in terms of your profession, just for the listeners?
Well, I am a police officer, so investigation is really my key point. And working with people and mental health, funny enough, I can sort of assess a person to say, you know what, I think we need to get them some help medically. I don't think there's actually anything, you know, paranormal actually happening here. And then other times you go, okay, something paranormal is happening here. So I sort of, do help with the investigation side of things, but I'm more the tech guru now, so the cameras and all the devices that we use. That's my sort of field that I like to have. But as we've gone on through the years, we sort of dropped the devices and sort of go, we actually just rely more on our bodies and our senses. And we can all walk into a room now and go, nah, nothing's in here. Or we walk into another room and go, you know what, it's going to go off in here. So we have definitely grown our own senses over the years to just sort of trust that we know what's going to happen in a room. And it's quite good because our energy as a group is phenomenal. We can get some amazing, amazing results.
I'm just curious as to what story it was that Dad told that made you want to reach out to us and kind of share this info with us, because it feels like you've kind of trusted us enough to reveal this stuff. So what was it about loose units and what anecdote was it that made you think, yeah, I should tell him this story?
Well, it was, I think, the Bali. I think when you were talking about Christine in Bali. That was the first thing. And then when I read the book, The Cells at North Sydney, I was like, oh, that's fascinating. So that's what gave me the idea that I can actually reach out and I won't be like poo-pooed.
Never. You know, the past in Sydney, you know, the colonial past is just so, some of these islands that we have in Sydney Harbour.
Well, funny you mentioned that, because Cockatoo Island was the island that we investigated for months on end. We actually got invited to that island.
Right. Oh. So what is it about Cockatoo Island that kind of drew you guys there? And could you talk us through some of the things that you, I guess, saw there or felt there? And when you go to a site like Cockatoo Island, is the first thing you do as a police officer looking into the crime that may have caused the sighting, or do you kind of work your way backwards?
No, it's definitely for me in the land. A lot of the land holds a lot of energy, and there's been such a horrible history of what's happened here in Australia that that energy just is in the land. So rather than, you know, a place being haunted, I say it's coming from the land sometimes. So Cockatoo Island, there's so many layers of history there and of tragedies and torment and just horrible stuff altogether there. You know, and we don't even know what that island was prior to, you know, being settled on. You know, there's heaps of history that's now been lost, unfortunately, that we won't know about that island. Yeah, so we would actually camp there over the weekends, which is really cool, except when it was stormy and rainy, that really sucked. We actually had access to a lot of the buildings. They trusted us with that. And we went to one of the cottages up the top of the island, and it was the naval officer's cottage. And in that cottage, we would have bursts of lights. Now, that cottage at that stage didn't have any electricity in it, so it wasn't like you could say there's an electrical fault. And one night, one of the first weekends I was there, we were trying to figure out why these bursts of lights were happening. And I was sitting in the living room with my back to the wall and looking out through French doors onto a balcony that looked across to the mainland. And as I was sitting there, a car came down the hill on the mainland, we're in the dark, and I got some car lights hit my face. And I was like, oh, well, this is really simple to explain. It's just literally the car lights from across in the other suburb coming through the trees and lighting up my vision. And as soon as I said that, this ball of light went off in the room. Like, couldn't explain it. We've got footage of it. And funny enough, no shadows were cast from this light, so it literally filled up the whole room. And so I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, I believe you now. I believe that you're here and you're setting these lights off. It was a bit of like a, hey, you know, I'll show you. I'm actually letting these lights off. So we were just in awe that that happened. And we were all like, very sorry for being so rude and not thinking it was you. So essentially we found out it was a naval officer that would come through. And he was quite upset that we were in his house, and he couldn't quite understand why we were being so disrespectful in his house. So, but we got to learn about him, and we called him Sir, just because he was a naval officer. Before I joined the group, they had captured some really good footage of a full body apparition in the house, and they analysed it, and they discovered that it was probably a kid with the... They measured the door frame to the kid, and they figured that was a kid. And so they set this camera up in one of the back rooms for about several hours. Now, to get to that back room, you would have to walk all the way through the house, and you could imagine an old house that hasn't been renovated. The floorboards all creaky, and outside is all pebbles. So there was no creaking, there was no walking on the pebbles, and then just this white apparition steps out from the door frame, looks at the camera, and then steps back in. It's just absolutely amazing.
Wow. How many people were there that night?
That night? I don't know that night because I wasn't part of the group when that was captured, I think.
Right.
So it was still the smaller group, maybe four or five people.
Mm.
So, and then they got it locked up, so you couldn't get back into the place. They couldn't without the security guard. So
is it difficult for you and the group to sort of, I mean, how do you just initially go about explaining to people what you want to do and, you know, what are the reactions that you get from the various, you know, organisations that when you explain what you do? I mean, you must be met with lots and lots of different sort of reactions.
Yeah, some are really good and positive, and they're really supportive of what we do and what we're trying to do for their property and their business. And that's some government organisations, and then other government organisations are still very, you know, back 30, 40 years and, you know, paranormal doesn't exist and that's just crazy talk. So you do get, you know, both sides of the coin.
One thing that Paul and I have often thought about, because, you know, I started at North Sydney Police Station, which is a historic building, and it's genuinely full of just the most extraordinary stories back into well into the 19th century. And that station, that physical station that I often drive past and occasionally pull up, and I actually have this sort of a, I mean, every probably 4 or 5 weeks, I pull up in my ute on the Pacific Highway, and I walk up to the building and I stand outside the front door.
Mm.
And it's as though that building wants me to go inside. Now, it's been locked up for so many years.
Mm.
I think that would be a wonderful place sometime in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, Dad, I'm just curious as to why. I mean, first of all, why would that building be haunted? And this is a question for you, Scarlett. What makes a building or a site susceptible to this stuff? Because I'll be honest, it feels like sometimes I enter an old building and my brain starts sort of inferring all these things, that, like, you know, the weight of history, right?
Mm.
And I start imagining all the terrible things that could have happened there. And sometimes I've walked into terrible places and not gotten that read at all. Like, Tegan and I did a show in the old Melbourne jail.
Mm.
And I'll be honest, I got nothing off the place. I felt really happy and calm there, and it was only later that I found out that actually several performers in the show had seen things, and one of them had something follow her home. So, you know, I'm curious as to, like, if I rocked up at the North Sydney Police Station, and you were there, and Dad was there, and you guys were picking something up and I wasn't, what would that say about me as a person?
Well, I'll start explaining that you can have what's called residue haunting. So it's like a film that's been caught in the building, in the materials itself, and it just plays over like a scene in a movie. So that's where you can get those type of hauntings from. And then there's other hauntings, which is a sort of new theory of, you know, you've got the string line theory of dimensions. Well, the theory is now that they're not straight, that they undulate and they have peaks and troughs, and at times those peaks and troughs will cross over. And so what's happening in one dimension is happening in our dimension, and we just happen to be there at the right time, at the exact time, to see it.
Right, so there's something happening in that exact spot.
Yeah.
Somewhere else, okay.
Yeah, so like, you know, you walk into old Nan's house and Nan's passed away, but you see Nan sitting in a chair and you freak out. But then in another dimension where she's alive, sees two males walk into the room, she freaks out. The dimension's crossing over, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But how do you contend with the fact that, I mean, look, law enforcement is ostensibly, it's about the facts, right? It's about kind of A plus B equals C. It is about, you know, finding practical solutions to real world problems. How do you marry your belief in this stuff and your, you know, job as a cop? Like, how do those two things interact, and do they ever contradict each other?
Oh yeah, they do all the time. So I do have to put one part aside and the other part of me that believes in this to the side. But in saying that, we actually call it our Spidey senses at work, and it does come in handy when you're going to like a house. And I can just walk to the front of the house and go, you know what, somebody's definitely inside. Or I can walk to the front of the house and go, you know what, nobody's inside. So, and it, you do need to work on facts and figures. And sometimes you just get a gut instinct for what is being said to you. It's the truth. And other times you just go, no, that's not the truth. And you just sometimes have to go with your gut. And it, you know, it does work out sometimes, because then you go, I'm going to start digging this way instead of that way. And it comes up with what actually happened. So sometimes you do need to take it into consideration, just go, you know what, this gut feels telling me to go down this path, and it works out well. And other times you just go, I've just got to stick to the facts here and what I can see. But yeah, definitely, it does cross paths. At the same time, it doesn't, if that makes sense.
I think, I think the essence of good policing, a lot of it is with the gut.
Yes. Yes, I'd have to agree.
Intuition. And how do you... explain intuition.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I mean, how do you... These things are not... They're not of this, almost not of this world. They're kind of, they're there. And some people just will go through life and never ever be aware of those senses.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff happening in the world that we are just unaware of.
But how do you use that? How do you use that in court? I mean, I had a feeling isn't admissible in court.
Right? Well, but everyone in court knows that they all know. Look, it's like the defense counsel will say to you in the witness box, why did you arrest my client? And everyone in the court knows the answer is because he's a fucking scumbag. But you don't say that, but everyone knows it. And the defense counsel knows it. The shitbag knows it. We all know it, but everyone goes, oh, well, you know, and then you start going on with the essence of...
Yeah, but Dad, the shitbag is not making things levitate across the room and walls bleed, right? I mean, that's... I have a question for you, Scarlett, because a lot of people are going to be listening to this season going, what the hell are they doing talking about ghosts? This is a crime podcast. It's a true crime podcast. And our argument, because Dad's a bit of a skeptic, I'm a bit more of a believer at this point. I'm hoping to turn Dad around. What would you say to Dad and those other people who are kind of on the fence and a little bit skeptical about the links between crime and, you know, the unexplainable?
Yeah, your gut instinct just comes into it. So you really got to run with that, and then you got to back it up with that. But then sometimes there's just cases that there's just nothing, there's absolutely no evidence, and you just need that bit of help. And I know in the past that police forces have used psychic mediums to help with solving cases, or even just getting bits of evidence to help them try and get facts. You know, look in this area, you know, look for this, try this. And they have used them before, and it's worked out for them. I know back when I started, I think a very long time ago now, they used a psychic medium, even though this psychic medium didn't help them get to the final part of the case that they were after. They actually found the torso of another woman from another murder.
Oh.
So then, because she was a missing person, they didn't know she was murdered. When they found the torso, obviously that opened that case up to a murder case. So they do use them. It's not so much that they sit in court and go, we used this psychic medium and it gave us this evidence, and therefore we followed that path. It's just more to assist them with, just going, where do we need to look? And they don't always do it. I'm sure if they do it, they're not going to publicise it, because here in Australia it's still a taboo subject with our government for some reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's, we're very behind compared to other police forces in the world when it comes to stuff like that.
There was a very famous case on the south coast of New South Wales involving a horrendous murder, and one of the most senior New South Wales police officers, who went almost to the very top of the tree rank-wise, he, to this very day, says that he used some contacts within that psychic world. He, to this day, swears that the case would not have been successfully concluded without their assistance. Now, the police force, the official line in the New South Wales police force is definitely one of, we don't approve, they just don't accept it. But it's a fact that police officers, good police, will use every single thing available to assist. Whilst it might not be sort of part of the above board, you know, sort of legal, constitutional in the rule book, make no mistake, when good police, particularly cold case crime, I mean, can you imagine the families of someone that had been missing for 30 years being told, you know, look, I'm sorry, we have these people, they can assist, but we're not allowed to use them? I mean, that's just, and I think it's, you know, I think it's very important to pursue these lines of inquiry, and as time progresses, you know, things may well change.
That's right. And I'm hoping so, but at the same time, I'm not holding my breath.
Right. What would you say to listeners who are on the fence and who don't believe in this stuff? What would you say to them to kind of turn them? What's something you've seen or heard that is just objectively irrefutable? Or is that kind of is that the tricky part?
I don't do that. I don't try to do that. That's their belief. Yep. And I'm not here to try and convince anybody elsewise. You know, I do believe a lot of people who are skeptics come out and say, you know, and I've had it myself, where people pull the piss out of me for doing what I do, and they're like, ooh, you believe in ghosts. And then when nobody's around, they'll come to me and be like, actually, you know what, I had this happen to me and I can't explain it, and blah, 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 blah. So I do believe a lot of people that go, I don't believe in this, have actually had experiences, but I'm too embarrassed to say anything. But yeah, I don't, like, I've got evidence that I can show people, and it doesn't matter, I could give them every explanation, scientific reason as to why it is the way it is and why it can't be what you think it is, and you still won't convince them otherwise. So that's just, I don't do that in my paranormal world. I just go, that's your belief. This is what I have. If you don't believe it, not my problem.
Well, look, in closing, is there anywhere that you think we should focus on geographically? Are there any specific sites that you think have really interesting history and stories behind them, like crime-related stories that have led to specific hauntings?
Oh, definitely Cockatoo Island. Definitely, because it was a prison, and you had a superintendent on that island that ruled with an iron fist. The layers there in regards to criminal activity and what happened and how it spread out to the rest of Australia is quite amazing. And I know that's old history, but you can't sort of touch on recent crimes. I think it's a bit too insensitive, if that makes sense. And another place is actually Port Arthur. Another place is riddled with horrendous crimes done by, you know, police and correctives. At that place, it's just horrendous. And yeah, I've been there with my partner and we've investigated there. And it was just, yeah, really eerie, real. Even during the day, it was just very eerie.
Yeah, we're hoping to get on site in person at some point. But what we wanted to do chatting with you was just to go, hey, it is possible for, you know, police work and, you know, paranormal investigation to coexist.
Yeah.
And here is someone who does both.
Yeah.
And, Dad, are you kind of more inclined to go down this?
Yeah, I'm stoked. I'm so excited to listen to someone who, for me, the fact that you're in the police force, in my opinion, gives you great credence. And I think it's exciting. And you're right, you know, a lot of people say one thing or think one thing, say another. People do question their own sort of their sanity, I guess, if you see something or you feel something. I mean, how many people have just been walking and all of a sudden had the most, and it can be during the day, and you get the most overwhelming sensation. You're just covered in goosebumps. It's just bizarre. Yeah. It's unexplainable. And you turn around almost positive that someone's there.
Mm.
There's no one there. So we're thrilled to, really, really excited to have had you on.
Well, look, thanks so much, Scarlett. And, yeah, if you see anything particularly weird, do reach out.
Yeah, we'll do.
Well, Dad, that was eye-opening. What did you think of that?
I'm intrigued.
Are you going to go to Cockatoo Island?
Well, funnily enough, this particular person has just been in touch and I'm scheduled to go to Cockatoo Island.
Now, how do you feel about that?
Well, I'm kind of mixed feelings. I actually went to Cockatoo Island once, Paul, to investigate a terrible fatality. And I'm going to arrive on this island by boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to pull up at the scene of this dreadful fatality that I was involved in when I was with WorkCover. I had to investigate a fatality. So I'm going to want to talk about this, but in sort of some interesting ways to the group, the paranormal group. They are then going to take me onto the island and just, well, it will be revealed what I see and experience, no doubt, in a later episode.
What time will you be getting there, do you know?
That I'm not sure about. Okay. But I quite frankly don't care on this particular occasion. In fact, a part of me would almost be really happy if the sun was actually shining. For my baby steps.
Right. So you've seen dead bodies. You've seen some serious shit. How does this scare you?
Because there's already a sense of, I mean, it's a very, very depressing and barbaric location.
Yeah.
Terrible things happened there. Mm. That's a fact. And it seems to be, the thread seems to be, even though it's early days, that it's generally terrible trauma that seems to do something. And don't forget, Paul and listeners, the most important aspect of perhaps our entire being, the thing that can control our lives. And if you become completely sort of swept up in the moment and then something terrible happens to sort of amplify and confirm your worst fears, well, one wonders how, and I think to myself, God, what happens if I actually do see something and I go, God, I mean, I don't know how I'm going to react.
If you see something, because I know you are a little bit of a skeptic, what will it take for you to kind of just immediately flip? First of all, it would be really confusing for us as a listener base, right? To go, all right, we started this show to try and turn Dad. He went on one trip, saw something vaguely spooky, and now he is completely turned and he's just a full-blown ghost hunter now. Or do you think it's going to take something a little more substantial for you to turn?
I think it's going to be on the balance of probabilities, I think it'll be a sort of a gradual evolving sort of process over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really know the answer to that question.
Okay, because, I mean, I told you the story up front all about Minnie. Do you think you're going to see a girl in a white dress? What are you hoping to see and what do you hope you don't see when you're there?
I'd hate to see something that I couldn't explain.
Right.
I'd really hate to see... Imagine, like, Look, I do have a fertile imagination, as you and the listeners know. Mm. But I'm... I mean, I do a walk every week in another creepy place in Sydney that's an ex-lunatic asylum, and it's fucking creepy. And I go there with a good friend, and it's daytime when we do this walk, and I often, again, because of what we're doing, Paul, where we're going on this adventure, in the last few weeks, I've actually stopped on our walk and looked up into the barred windows of this asylum from the mid-19th century, and I almost expect to see someone looking down from these windows during the day.
Mm.
So if that's affecting me at that level now during the day on a walk, I think I'm in for a pretty trippy time.
Yeah,
and I hope I can sort of keep my composure.
Can I tell you something? And this might be me trying to play armchair psychologist, but the fact that you walk past this place during the daytime and you half expect, as you said, to see something, implies to me that you kind of want to.
Look, there are some people that just can't handle it. I mean, if I'm watching something horrific by myself at midday on TV, bearing in mind that I'm not sort of a midday TV type person, but occasionally, like that American Horror Story, I started watching it about a year ago. During the day, I got so scared, the first thing I would do is just avert my gaze and look away. Now, that's just television, and that can totally freak me out. And you know, Paul, I'm 61, and I'm sort of, I'll admit it, I sometimes get these, I have terrible nightmares occasionally, and sometimes I literally can't get out of bed to go to the toilet. I mean, my foot was hanging over the bed a few weeks ago, and I literally had this feeling that someone was under the bed and would grab my foot and drag me to hell. I'm not kidding.
You're a scaredy cat.
Yeah. I don't think I'd be putting it so in such a trite way.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, like, isn't that the weird thing? Like, nighttime is different to daytime.
Yeah, of course. There's a different energy, right?
Different energy.
Yeah.
And although occasionally, not often, but I was by myself a few months ago, I think I mentioned it to you, and I was coming into our block of, you know, apartments here, and I just had the most... I was overcome with sheer... I just had this feeling that there was a presence behind me, and it covered my body in goosebumps. It was 10 in the morning, for God's sake, on a magnificent day, no clouds, no wind, everything's just sweet. And then all of a sudden, I just had the most shocking sensation as I walked towards the front door of this building. And I was covered in goosebumps for no apparent reason. And secondly, I had to turn around and see what was behind me.
Mm.
And there was no one there. Now, how do you explain that?
Can I tell you something? I strongly suspect that you are closer to tipping over into belief in this stuff than I had actually thought, which is frankly way more interesting. First of all, I'm not going to have to work as hard. But secondly, I feel like it's going to mean that when you go somewhere, or when we do a live show on site in some haunted place, or when we have an expert on and they're trying to, you know, kind of convince us of something, what I'm trying to say is that your time in the police force has maybe made you more open-minded than I thought, which is really useful. But what we're going to try and do over the coming weeks and over the coming season is to really dive into some locations that are, for lack of a better term, haunted as hell. So we're going to be looking at places like the old Melbourne jail. We're going to try and talk to a priest who has performed an exorcism. That's kind of like a wish list thing. I mean, I'm really hoping that we can get in touch with a priest who...
Well, we do have his name, which I think is extraordinary. Just getting... Oh. I've got his mobile number, and I think just achieving that's remarkable, Paul, but we don't want to blow it with him.
Yeah, and obviously, because if you call up and you come in too hard, I mean, it's like dating, really, except in no way is it like dating. We're also going to try and look at a couple of places around Australia which are kind of lesser known for their hauntings, including, Dad, you had somewhere that you wanted to do for episode 2.
Mm. I kind of got a bit carried away, Paul.
Right.
There's a location. It's ostensibly the most haunted road in Australia. Mm-hmm. Now, that sounds on the surface a bit, yeah, whatever, but I've been doing a lot of research, and it is so seriously fucked up, this stretch of road. It's so bad, and it's all about trauma. Oh, God. I don't know what... I must have had a brain snap. I must have had a rush of something or other, because I came up with a bit of a brainwave, and it was a sunny day. I excitedly called you,
yeah,
and said, Paul, I've had a brainwave. What about at midnight, I drive out there in the ute and, well, I'll have to sort of tether my phone to the computer and have the microphone, and you can be in Melbourne feeling all comfortable in your nice apartment.
And we'll be doing a show down the line with you parked on the side of this stretch of extremely haunted road. Can you tell the listeners what this road is?
Yeah, it's called the Wakehurst Parkway.
Okay.
But I've been doing a lot of research, and the thread about ghosts and all that sort of supernatural stuff seems to be mainly sort of attached to trauma. I'm actually going to go to the location of something really bad that I haven't told you. We have discussed a certain thing that happened when I was in the fire brigade, you recall, on that road. So I'm going to go to very close to that location, because that's really interesting in that that is probably the most horrific, traumatic thing. And then I've got some incredible first-hand accounts by very, very sane, rational people. And I've dug up a story from someone, and I've really gone deep into this guy's story.
I guess my concern with these places is that it's entirely possible that you're going to rock up and you're going to be towing in all this emotional baggage and all this psychic baggage from things that you know for a fact have happened there. But I think what's useful is the fact that I'm going to be on the line with you, and we're going to talk about this stretch of road, and we're going to talk through some of the things that happened there, and we're going to try and really... There is something so great about getting you there, and we'll be able to hear how freaked out you are, because as we've learned in this episode, Dad, this is new information for me, and I think it's new information for listeners to Loose Units who've been with us from the beginning, and it's probably very confusing for new listeners who are rocking up going, hardened ex-cop, scared of the dark. I mean, that's a really great... Every superhero's got to have their weakness, right?
I've got a mate a few days ago. He said to me laughingly,
yeah,
he said, John, he said, I take it you're going to get out of the ute and, you know, walk around and... And I just looked at him and said, are you insane?
Oh, you're not going to get out.
Are you joking?
Why wouldn't you get out?
Well, that's ridiculous.
Get a mass spectrometer or something.
I'm not getting out of my ute.
Why not?
Well, why should I?
Because it's spookier, Dad.
No, it's scary enough being... what I envisaged happening was that I'm just in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, there's a... Anyway.
No. See. Dad, if the power on the laptop goes out. You're parked on the Wakehurst Parkway. It's 1 a.m. We've just finished recording. All the power goes out, and you whack the laptop, and the light comes on, and you look in the rearview mirror, and there's someone in the back of the car with you. And then that image gets transferred down the laptop. It's the last photo I ever see of you. The car and you are never seen again. I feel...
Gee, you're a barrel of laughs, Paul.
I mean, the thing about ghost stories, Dad, and this is something everyone can openly acknowledge, we want to be scared because we live in a world where I think everyone wants to believe that there is something else out there, right? Whether it's good or evil or benevolent or whatever, or elemental or indifferent or cruel or kind. And the idea that there is something, anything out there, which doesn't obey the rules that we seem to need to make sense of the world. The idea that something would be so capricious as to reach into your life and just snuff it out, and I would get a creepy photo or a weird text message or something. I think it's electric. And I think even telling that little hypothetical about you disappearing and that photo being sent to me and the person in the back, like that shit is creepy. And also, part of me... And part of you, you suggested driving to this stretch of the Wakehurst Parkway at midnight and calling me up. You suggested it. And I think you suggested it because part of you, deep down, is hoping that something fucking scary happens.
I don't want something scary to happen.
But okay, so in that case, you're going there to prove that there is nothing haunting about the place.
No, neither. I think it's important that I be there to tell the story.
Okay.
It's going to be visceral.
Yeah.
And I have thought about pulling out of the whole thing and just not doing it.
Yeah, of course.
Because I just think it was a bit, you know.
It was a dumb idea and now we have to do it, is what
you're
saying.
Right. Yeah.
Because in the spirit of doing this, we are going to try and really tie these stories to different locations, right? Mm. So I think there's part of me wants us to somehow finagle our way back into the old North Sydney police station where you actually used to work. Because a lot of these places have really bad energy. Sometimes you walk into a room or a house and you go, nope, this isn't right. Something's wrong. Something happened here. Now, the Wakehurst Parkway has just had a litany of tragedies and mysteries happen up and down the stretch of road. And it's a long way from anything. And it's going to be midnight. And I'm going to get a call from you. And you're going to be in the back of the car. And let me tell you something else. You're going to be lit up because of the laptop, which means that anyone driving past is going to see you.
Mm. Now, Paul, there's no back of a ute. You with me?
Well, sure.
If I look in the rear vision mirror in my ute and see a demonic presence crawling over the tarpaulin towards that back bit of glass, I'm taking off. I'm gone. Mate, fuck the podcast. I'm serious. If something bad goes down, I'm out of there, okay? And things happen. Just FYI for the listeners, I'm actually going to be parked pretty close to where the torso, the crossbow murder, shot his victim.
Oh, fuck.
I'm going to be there, okay?
Dad, this is
great. And that's a really bad place.
This is so great. This has gone from me worrying that you weren't going to be on board to you revealing that you're a scaredy cat to you volunteering to be on the most haunted stretch of road in Australia. If that's not a good setup for this season, I don't know what is.
Paul, listen. If I could get the head of the homicide squad or any, person in the world... I think no matter who you are, if you could transport that person into the middle of... I mean, can I just say this to you on the outset? I'll tell you one place in Australia I would never go by myself and do this. Do you want to know where that is?
Where?
I would never go to Belangolo State Forest.
Ever. Never.
I would not go there by myself in my ute and do a podcast. And I defy... I mean, it's all very well people talking about going and doing these things, but I'm by myself, okay? Sweet Christine said to me, oh, would you like me to come with you? I said, you're very sweet, but no, because then I wouldn't be shit scared.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going by myself.
Yep.
So I don't care how macho you are, how brave, how whatever. If you get anyone by themselves to do what I'm going to do that night, I think that's pretty cool and stupid.
It's the height of... Because you used to skydive, you used to scuba dive, you were a big risk taker.
These things don't rate.
No.
Because my mind's going to take over and probably implode.
There's going to be an existential horror about this, and we really can't wait. And that's going to be episode 2 of this show. This season is going to be bananas. If you are new to Loose Units, welcome. If you have been listening for many seasons, prepare for something completely different. So we're going to be back at midnight every Monday with a brand new episode of Loose Units, The Shadow Files. Make sure you stick around every week also for our bonus spin-off podcast. Every Friday, we release a spin-off called Loose Ends, which began as a way of coping with lockdown, which has just sort of become like a weird talk show. We'll be doing lots of great stuff like responding to your emails and messages, talking about stuff that we couldn't talk about on the main show, and generally just helping each other get through this weird old thing called life. So thank you so much for listening to the very first episode of Loose Units, The Shadow Files. I'm Paul, that's John, and next time we see you... Dad'll be parked on a haunted stretch of road and hopefully not getting murdered. Bye, everyone!
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.